Hi everyone and welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Steve Reboyne, who's a logo and brand designer from Connecticut. He's an ex-Marine serving two tours, he's a family man, and he's also managing a full-time job with being a designer as well. He's passionate about craft beer and making sure that the best work he makes is done every single day, no matter what, fitting it around whatever schedule he has available, which is something that I hope you guys will be super interested in today's show. So we're going to go straight into it. I know we've been missing for a couple of weeks because I've been moving to London, but we're back now, things are back on track, and we're going to get straight into this episode. Hi everyone and welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today I'm joined by Steve Reboyne, who's literally fresh off the cuff from being on The Future. This is going to be coming out a couple of weeks after that, but Steve, from Connecticut, land of the free, well, we say that, but moving on through, we'll talk about that later. So Steve, how are you doing today? What's going on?
Good, man. Thanks for reaching out and having me on the show. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be the highest production in the world compared to maybe what you did on The Future, but I've been watching your stuff for a long time. I think we've actually been in contact since nearly the beginning of 2018, maybe even earlier than that.
Yeah, probably through, like, interweaving through Instagram.
Yeah,
we probably
have
the same connections there, most likely.
For sure. So for people at home who might not know much about you, I think people in my audience definitely will, but can you give them a little bit of a rundown on who you are, what you do, maybe what your favorite metal band is? Because we're going to talk about that as well.
Sure, yeah. I'm a logo designer, brand identity designer. I live in Connecticut. Been working as a graphic designer for about 10 years. I have a full-time job and I do logo design. I present myself as a logo designer because that's what I want to do. And that's like my side gig that I've been really putting a lot of effort into the last 2 to 3 years. So, that's kind of it. A family man, married, two kids, kind of trying to do it all, trying to be fit, run a business, have a job, kind of do it all.
Say, what's the trade-off? Sleep?
Yeah, definitely the sleep. I don't know if you could tell.
Is that a new addition or is that something that's been working its way up?
Oh, no. I haven't slept in years. Like, my daughter didn't sleep for like the first 5 years. So I'm pretty well trained to survive on no sleep. Even in the Marine Corps, I didn't sleep at all. So
yeah, that's actually something that might be a little bit unusual for people listening at home. A lot of creative people literally come either, they don't know what to do with their jobs or their lives, so they do something creative and pick it up from there. You joined the Marine Corps in, how old are you when you joined? Just out of?
I was 20, actually. So yeah. I was out of high school for a year.
Yeah.
And was in art school, like just drawing as an illustration major. And then right after 9/11, I left and I had joined the military because I was stupid.
Well, is it stupid? There must have been something that spurred you to do that at the time.
I think I grew up like my family is like basically working poor.
Right.
So when I did go to college, my parents were like, "Hey, man, we don't have any money for you, so mm-hmm. good luck." So I was taking student loans to draw pictures and like drink too much and party too hard, and not really knowing where I was going to go or like how to even get a job as an illustrator. So then when it happened, and you know, I was like a athlete, super, testosterone filled young man, so I could take on the world, and I figured, like my classic style is go crazy. Like, oh, I'm going to be in the military, so I guess I'll be in the Marines because they're the toughest outfit. Stupidly, I should have done like the Coast Guard or Air Force or something.
Air ambulance or something like that.
Yeah.
Not to diminish those jobs, but yeah, I get what you're saying. It's why go from 0 to 3 when you could go 0 to 11? And is that something that's kind of come across your life through the last 10 years or so?
That's been everything my whole life.
Everything,
it's like if I do something, like I don't know how to half-ass anything. Mm. It's like, I'm going to get into bodybuilding. I'm not just going to lift weights. I'm going to compete in a show. I'm going to be a weightlifter. I'm going to go try to break the snatch record in Connecticut. I want to, brew beer. Well, I'm going to do 10 gallons a month and enter this beer into a beer contest. Like I'm either doing it all the way or I'm not doing it at all. And that's everything.
Yeah, I feel very much the same way about a lot of the stuff I do. It's either all in or all out.
Yeah.
And have you ever found that to be a little detrimental?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I mean, that's everything. Like, oh, I'm not going to have like a cookie. I'll eat a whole package. Or like, I'm not going to have one beer. I'm going to have like 13.
I'm going to black like, out. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I have a very hard time like limiting myself basically in anything. Like, I can't just like, oh, I'm going to eat clean to get healthy. No, I'm going to be on a strict paleo diet for 6 months.
Yeah. And that type of stuff is an amazing habit to have. And if you've been like that forever, it seems like going into the military was probably a fairly good fit for that. From what I understand of the process, particularly over in the UK side anyway. Is that kind of how you felt? You felt like you fit in there and it was the right thing to do at the right time? Or looking back, was it kind of...
Oh, I fit in perfectly. I mean, my dad was super strict. He was like a no bullshit type of guy. And then like, I was an athlete. So like, I had like really old school football coaches who were like, they would punch you and shove you around and call you like every name under the sun. So like, I went out to boot camp between like my father and my high school football coach. Like, these drill instructors weren't shit. Like, I was like, okay, I'm not scared of you. I've been through worse.
Yeah, for sure. Especially when you can, I mean, it's maybe not the nicest thing to have in your life, but to be able to say, well, this is not the worst. We can do better, or we can go higher. We can go harder. We can go faster than anybody else around you is a quality that not many people have, especially when even people my age at 24 or slightly younger coming out of university. You look around and you see people who just have no discipline, no drive, no desire to stick to anything for 6 months, as you've said, let alone like 6 days, let alone 6 months. So when it came to turning and leaving the Marines, what drew you back to design? Because this is something I wrote down that I don't think was actually kind of discussed in your interview with Chris, is that I was thinking about the way that career shift came into mind, because obviously you wanted to do illustration at university, and that's why you started there. But then there's a massive career shift, and a lot of people who come out of the military, my dad was in the Navy, they typically stay in adjacent fields. So my dad was an engineer in the Navy on helicopters. Now he works privately as an engineer, and a lot of people who I know would stick to adjacent fields, but you've kind of gone backwards, well, not backwards, but gone back to being creative. So what kind of made that mindset shift for you when you left the Marines?
Yeah, so I guess my job in the Marine Corps was like logistics and embarkation, which was like packing people and moving them and deploying them overseas. So loading ships, loading airplanes, but you have to think logistically, thinking all of the moving parts that go into that. Like, do they have everything they need? Fuel, food, everything, right? Like, it's a humongous amount of thought. That helps me now when like designing, so like an identity, thinking like, what are all the moving parts that would need to be considered? Like, what are the touch points for a business?
Just to slide that keyword in there. Yeah. Keep going.
But like when I left the military, I honestly didn't know how what I did would even translate to the civilian world. And I'm like this like Forrest Gump type of person. Like, I try to take like things just like happen to me. I feel like I don't know if I'm like I make them happen or they just happen. But I tend to gravitate towards things I know like I can do well at this. Like, I was good at art. I wasn't good at math and science. I had already gone to university for illustration for a couple of years, so I had like all the prerequisites already done. So I knew like if I went back for graphic design, that's just less work that I'd have to do. I could finish in like another 2 years versus a whole 4 year degree and something else. I was like, I'm 25 now. I have a car payment. I have an apartment. I need to just finish school and get a job. It's more like the path of least resistance, with more than anything.
Yeah. Especially to be able to take those skills. If you've learned the baseline in art, so if you did your art theory, you did, so you did a course in illustration. Yeah. That's what it was.
Oh yeah. I did like tons of illustration. I even took some courses at a community college when I was in the military right before I got out. I had like a year and I wasn't going to get deployed. So I took like a life drawing course, a rendering course with some really high level professors that actually also taught at Art Center, but they also moonlighted at this community college. So I learned like really, really good stuff for nothing, because the military picked up the tab for that.
I guess that's also one of the benefits of being in the service. There are some benefits to education, particularly, I can only speak again from the UK side, but the army out here will pick up students and take you all the way through your GCSEs and most of your college degree stuff as well, if you want to train to be a specific person in the military, which I think is an incredible benefit. And the fact you were able to go back to school and actually take some of those skills that you learned in the Marines and translate that to a civilian side and then be where you are today, that's quite an impressive, many people see that as a turnaround, but the way you've described it, it feels like that flows just like as a system. Like you could do that, you could run multiple people through that. It sounds
right.
It sounds like a really productive way to learn those skills.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I guess I call it the path of least resistance, but another part of my insanity is like trying to be efficient all the time. Like what's the, like I, even my like movement patterns throughout the house or throughout the day, like I project like how I will move efficiently through the house to get the most quickest way or whatever, like driving, like, you know what I mean? Like, so I just think about that stuff even in my life, like what's going to be the most efficient path to get here? So.
So what was the most efficient path then out of school to becoming a designer that you enjoyed? What was, did you have that kind of forward, that forethought, that foresight to push that direction? Or was it a case of, well, we're going to try this and see what happens and pick up those efficiencies along the way? Because you'd started doing and pushing for being a logo designer, identity designer. In what year kind of did you go hardcore with that? When did you turn it to 11, shall I say?
Oh, it was probably 2016 is when I really turned it up that I wanted to be an independent designer. And it wasn't until after I talked to Chris in like 2017, 2018 that he said, you know what, you're good at logos. Stop with this other stuff that you're trying to do and just focus on the logo designer. So it's only probably 2017. So what's that, 2 years? Yeah, two years.
So with those 2 years gone, what was the first thing that you kind of realized, oh shit, oh, by the way, we can swear.
Okay.
Go for it. When you were like, just, oh shit, like, I've been doing this wrong the entire time. How do I just step up? Was it that moment with Chris? Was it kind of that epiphany moment of having someone else come into your bubble and go, maybe you should rearrange your shelves slightly and see what happens?
Oh yeah, totally. Because, when I went to backtrack a little bit, I had gotten a master's degree because where I live, there's not a whole lot of jobs. So like, it's weird. Like the more training you get, the more expensive you become. And you think like, oh, I'll get another job because I'll get a good job because I have a master's degree. But like in the creative field, I don't think people care about that. You know what I mean? Like all they see is like, dude, you're expensive. I could get a graduate and pay them half what you're asking. So my idea was I would just start putting out work and create my own job or my own business or get the attention of somebody who might want to hire me. So like I said, I was just doing all kinds of random stuff because I had no idea. I found this guy named Chris Piasek. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He's from the States here.
Don't recognize that name.
If you look him up, he does like, this is what I picked up from him is he would do a doodle and a drawing every day and he posted it for like 15 years. And they're just like these silly little cartoons. And over time, he started getting attention from people like Converse, Nickelodeon, McDonald's, and now he's like completely independent for just doing these cool little doodles. It's really cool work, but I was like, oh, man, I'm gonna do that. So he was the first one that kind of like inspired me to start doing daily posts. So I had all kinds of crazy junk, and then when I talked to Chris and he looked through my stuff, he's like, well, a lot of this is garbage, but your logo work is solid. And he's like, are you getting paid for these doodles and things? I was like, no, like nobody's ever asked me for that. He's like, do people pay for logos? So like, yes. He's like, well, there you go. And like that night I went through my entire feed and deleted like 2,000 posts, just like gone. I'm like, fine, I don't care. Like I'm not emotionally attached to any of this. Like if he came and said like, this isn't for you, you should go like do construction with your dad. I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. Cause like, I think the biggest problem is I've never really had a good creative mentor this entire time. It's always been, I've had jobs in like the people who are above me were not like creative people. They've been more like business types who like play it safe and like, oh, well, you got to do what I worked in like a hospital. So it was like, oh, the doctors were making the creative decisions, which is absurd. So like I never really had that really strong creative mentor. So when he came along and gave me advice, I was like all over it. Like, please, whatever you got to say, I'll take it. And I don't know, every time I've followed his advice, good things have happened.
I'll say, do you see Chris as kind of a mentor to you then, even in a semi-permanent internet way?
Or is totally.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, like, I follow a lot of the stuff. I've incorporated so much of the stuff that they just put out in their general content, like how they present design options and how they conduct strategy. Like, I was like, oh my God, I didn't know any of this. Like, I started just like implementing it on my own clients immediately, and it works. So, are you do the same way? Or I mean, I've seen you on
that. So the we're talking about Chris Doe from the future, for anyone who doesn't know. The future being the design education platform across on YouTube. And Steve was part of the Spartan Design Challenge. What is that, two years ago?
Yeah, it was like 2 years ago, exactly.
Yep. Yeah, 2 years ago, which was about creating a new logo and some really awesome merch for the Spartan race, which is similar to things like Tough Mudder or any of those military style adventure course charity runs that you might find across the States or across Europe. And so that's your first interaction with the future. And I will get back to that in a second, but to answer your question, yes, I have and do still see Chris as a mentor, and it was so wonderful to be part of that Young Gun series, to have that interaction with him more one-to-one, especially when it was about a particular project. But in many ways, I think it's in the book Think and Grow Rich, where the guy who wrote Think and Grow Rich talks about setting up a list of dead mentors, or people you can look up to as mentors but not talk mm-hmm. to. So that's kind of the way I see Chris as well, and I'm sure lots of people listening to the content and the podcast do as well, where you see these people, you interact with them online, you watch all their content, and you feel like they're your mentor, even if you don't ever get that interaction.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I just think I was fortunate enough to get his attention where he actually reached out to me. So, and I mean, that was totally, when I started doing the Spartan thing, I was like, you know, I'm going to go hard on this thing. I'm going to see what, you know, maybe I'll get some attention, and it worked. So
I am pretty sure I saw your stuff through the Spartan Challenge originally, thinking about it, because the amount of stuff that you put out and the amount of different designs that you put out into the world to just kind of go on this one idea. It was at the time, thinking about that would have been mid-2017. Instagram was a very different place back then, which is weird to say. Like, 2 years ago, it was a very different place. And the way that you interacted with that challenge and the way you continue to interact with people on social now was completely different to the way most people were doing it. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that Chris noticed as well. And when it came down to, at the time, you were making daily posts, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So why did you want to pick that up as a daily challenge rather than just continuing what you were doing? Was it just a notice for a pivot?
You know, I don't know. The thing is, when you do like a daily, it gets really tough after a while to try to do like 365, right? Like, try to come up with something. But I think when that challenge came up and it was like, okay, oh, this is easy. I can just focus on this one thing for like a month and I could come up with 30 different versions of this. That's no big deal. Try to come up with 30 completely original things on their own is way more difficult. So I was just like, you know, I'm going to ride this till it's over.
You're going to burn this one into the ground and see happens. Rise like the phoenix out of the ashes. Yeah.
That's my whole thing. It's like, throw enough shit at the wall. Mm-hmm. Something will eventually stick. Like, if you, it's something, even if like, out of all of that, like out of 2 years, I posted every day. And like, I think I just threw it all away. You know what I mean? Like, but eventually, you know, a couple, they liked a couple of those out of that whole set. So whatever.
Do you think that it benefited you doing kind of a daily challenge regardless of what it was? Because I get messages quite a lot about this. I know people like Bless Creatics get it as well. Talking about doing 36 days of lettering or whatever it is, constantly trying to post something every day for a year. And I think I managed about 6 months at one point. And then I was just like, I'm done. Like, I just can't manage it. But when you started, and then just thinking about at the end of that year, or even just at the end of that Spartan challenge, over the 30 days of doing the same project or the same brief, did you see noticeable difference in that habit?
Oh, totally. Because I've done a ton of challenges. I've did like the 36 logos. I did the Logo Learn. I did the Spartan race. I did 36 days of type. I did Doodle or Die. I did my, I made my own, where I try to get people to do like this, like dumb comic book character challenge. If you sit in the, in one, if you sit in the software every day and try to make something, you'll learn something, right? Like, you'll learn shortcuts. You'll learn how to iterate really fast, how to just like come up with a bunch of different versions of like one style or letter mark or idea. But I think in the long run, it helped me like form my, the habits that I have now, where like, and at the time, 2 years ago, I didn't have a lot of client work to do. So it wasn't a big deal to just bang this stuff out. Now it's a lot harder because I actually have client work now. So I have way less time for like huge daily explorations. But in doing them daily for like 2 years, I have kind of built my little, the way I go about my day to fit things in. Like, I'll do my, my daily on a, in an hour in the morning, or as a warm up before I start working, or during my lunch break, or after my kids go to bed. And I kind of like, just like have a good, I've built a rhythm where it's like, it's not disruptive to my, like my family or my life to just like, oh, I'm going to sit down and bang something out quick. And my wife's not like, what are you doing? Like, she knows what I'm doing. Like, I'm just, I'm dicking around over here, making something. But a lot of times now, like, instead, I probably like, I will like tone down the challenges actually at this point. Just because I'm trying to transition away from just like Steve, the random guy, making tons of random stuff, to more like I'm a design company and showing a lot more of the higher level client work that I'm doing. And then showing process, a lot more process, like sketching and gridding and stuff like that, versus just rando haphazard posts.
So do you feel that that distinction, that there is a distinction between being just a solopreneur, just being a freelancer under your own name, to having RDC, Reborn Design Co? Do you feel that there is a perception thing externally, so from people looking at you, or do you feel it kind of inside, like you feel different having changed?
Both. I think in, so my, the deal is, instead of doing, like, I like to do a lot of random things. Like, I like to do these logos, and I like to mess around with old like Transformers and superhero things. Like, but I thought, well, what if I do this weird stuff but incorporate it under the umbrella of a Reborn Design Co-, like similar to, like, you know, like Lincoln Design Company and the stuff that they do. They do all kinds of crazy cool stuff, but it's all under that name, right? It's like they can kind of, you can kind of do a lot. There's, it, it kind of opens up, instead of just looking so haphazard, it looks a lot more thoughtful. And then on the flip side, I've been getting a lot more leads from clients. I was getting a lot of work in 2018, but then now I'm trying to transition from the lower level clients, and I want more serious clients. And I feel like transitioning myself to Reborn Design Company, because it's like I have a kid that works with, for me, that helps me with a lot of production and a lot of overflow. And I want to be taken more seriously and go after much larger projects. And I think positioning myself that way will help bring me to the those conversations, versus like this random guy, oh, I have like $120, can you bang this out quick in 4 days? That's not really where I want to be. I want to be at the bigger the big boy table, you know what I mean?
The big boy table, yeah, because that's something I picked up from what you were talking about with Chris, is that you have this grander plan, which is something that I wanted to tap into a little bit and understand where you see that going. Because for a lot of people who are either part of your community or my community, I'm sure you see this and get messages about this a lot, which is kind of, I'm doing this as me, but I'm noticing that I'm only getting these small jobs. I'm only getting this, I'm getting that. And they want to transition to something bigger. So what's your, well, firstly, would you recommend doing that at kind of the beginning stage, setting yourself up as an identity company rather than, or a larger brand like Lincoln Design Co, than just having your own name? Or is that personal brand been effective for you as well?
You know, I'm not sure yet. I mean, I'm sort of like right in the middle. It's like real time in the beginning of that transition. I've actually started getting, so what started is what Chris was like, okay, so back up. I went to a conference back in April, the CropCon from down in Louisiana. Matt Dawson runs that.
Yep.
Stay Gray
Pony Boy, I believe. Yeah, go and check out Matt Dawson and Stay Gray Pony Boy. The convention sounds great, especially the next one that's coming up.
It's really cool. And like people show up and they have like their all their gear, like, and they have like shirts and swag and like, sure. Like, I'm sure like they're not making a ton of money off that stuff. And that's not even the idea. Like, I want to make shirts and sell shirts and start this whole clothing brand or anything like that. But I think like it spawned the idea, like, well, what if, why not? Like, I'm already making all these letter forms. Well, why not make my own and make cool stuff that people would want? Well, I'd give it away. I'll give it all away. I don't care. But I'm sorry, I kind of lost you there. So when Chris had, what's the guy's name? Blair Enns on his show. Mm-hmm. And you know, he talked about like, you kind of have to like develop the social proof first and develop the skill and like prove yourself, basically like work for anybody, take the work, take the shit jobs to build the skill and the body of work that will allow you to command a price tag, right? Like, so I feel like I've done that. And now I'm in that transition where I have to like stop doing all the work and saying, and now I'm like saying no to a lot of people so that I can go after that, that bigger thing. And then when Chris was saying that, hey, you should have a deck because that's going to get you to the table. Coincidentally, I get like 5 leads where people are like, well, we have a budget of 25K. What are your capabilities? And I'm like, shit, I should probably make that happen. Because I would like, you know what I mean? If you come to the table with like, oh, I can make this logo. They're going to like, well, okay, well, I guess we'll pay you $500. But if you can show people in a business way that you're a legit business and what you can do for them, then they'll take you seriously. And that's kind of where I'm trying to go.
And when it came down to that social proof, do you find it hard saying no to people?
I do a lot, yeah. Especially I get so many requests now from like actual like acquaintances and friends and stuff. And then it's hard. Like I really want, and a lot of times like I had a friend has like this trying to do some cannabis stuff. And that's something like, oh dude, I really want to jump on because I feel like that's going to be the next thing that's going to blow up. So I'd love to get in on it. But like, he just wasn't coming correct with that. Like he's like, I spent my first logo, I spent $25 on, and I'm like, how am I going to get this guy from 25 to 5K? And I'm just like, you know what, man, I don't think I'm the right guy for you, just because I was like, this is going to be a struggle. I think friends are hard. Sometimes it's actually great if I know the guy, like a friend's going to be really cool. They're like, hey man, I got like $2,000 or $1,500, can you just hook me up? I need a logo for a trade show. I need business cards and stuff. Can you just bang? And I'll bang it. I mean, that's a good weekend gig. I'll take it. But saying no to people, mostly like friends, people I know, is difficult. Saying no to complete strangers, I have no problem with, like, at all, because I don't feel like I owe those people anything.
Yeah, and that's a mindset that I don't think many people have, or many people in the creative industry have, because I think you have quite a unique perspective with this, where you've been an athlete, you've come from a working class background, you have been in the military, you've got a lot of discipline, you have the ability to pick out bullshit, and you have the ability to see someone for who they are and what they need and what they want and what you owe them, if anything. And at least that's what I understand talking to you and listening to you talk to Chris. That's how I understand and see your personality. So when it comes through to saying no to someone, that's the exact answer I expected you to give, was that those who I respect and those who I love, I find it difficult to say no to. But when it comes to a complete stranger on the street, it's the same for me. I can just say no to everything. But a lot of people who are creative are heavily introverted and struggle with the idea of saying no, or have very strong scarcity mindset, where if they say no, they feel like they're going to be homeless because they're never going to get a job again.
Right.
And so did you ever have that feeling? Obviously, you've got a family to support. You have a full-time job too, but which we touched on briefly. But have you ever felt that maybe not taking a job on has been a mistake? In terms of just in money, maybe not like the cannabis idea where you've said, oh, that'd be a fab job to work on, but like purely based on the cash flow side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I turned down a job recently. It was a 10K identity job for a law firm in LA. And I got dude red flags all over the place. And I said, you know what? I'll pass. And they were about to send me a check. And I was like, you know what? I'm good. They hit me up. And the thing was that they said, oh, we're rebranding. We need a new logo. And I put them through, you know, like, why? Why would you do that? And the answer was, well, the owner's wife, they've gotten divorced. I'm the new girlfriend. I'm in charge of the logo design. The ex-wife designed the original logo, and we want to like eradicate her from the business. Blah, 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 blah. Flag number one. Flag number two is, after discussion, she shot me a Dropbox full of all the sketches she had done. Like hundreds of sketches. Meanwhile, this woman was a very high level attorney, allegedly. And I'm like, dude, how much do attorneys charge? Like $700 an hour, $800? And you're over here sketching? Like, dude, that's a complete waste of time. Flag two, like, you're way too into this project. there might've been something else, but I just like, was like, you know what? This has a nightmare written all over it. I'm not going to do it. And that could have been big, I guess, but it wouldn't have been worth it. And now I'm like, dude, I would have lost like a month of my life easily. You know what I mean? I don't think I've ever regretted saying no. Cause I think I'm usually pretty good. I've definitely regretted saying yes way more.
When was the last time you regretted saying yes? And was it a design job or was it something in real life?
Oh, no, no. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, off the top of my head, you know, without outing anyone, probably I've agreed to a recent job. You know, I kind of reduced my rate just to kind of help somebody out, and like it kind of went sideways. you know, they ended up just, I presented a bunch of stuff and it looked really good. Everything's great. Oh, here, I drew this on my kid's pad. I think it should look more like this at the last second type of thing. And I was like, you know what? Fine. Let's just get this over with.
But yeah, those kind of jobs come in though, don't they? Like occasionally your filter just doesn't catch everything.
Yeah. The thing is, I do a lot of like gyms and a lot of craft beer work. And this one was a gym. And I was like, oh, I can do this. I can just knock this out. This will be easy. Easy money. And everything was totally smooth until like, yeah, the very end. It's like, yeah, it's great. Oh, on second thought, I was playing around on, you know, that was the worst. I was playing around on my kid's pad and I drew this around what you had already done. And I was like, motherfucker.
My kid's got this eye pencil. And
yeah, that's when I was like, oh, all right. Well, whatever you want, man. You got it. You're up.
By the time you're in that deep, it's a bit too late. And it's...
Yeah.
So... when it comes to spotting red flags, do you have like a specific set of things that you notice? Obviously, you've mentioned there that personal biases, as in trying to eradicate an ex-wife. You've mentioned sending you sketches, and you've also mentioned the idea of changing things last minute or spotting those or paying very little for the money. But is there anything that you might be able to pass on to other people listening that is like a major red flag you hadn't thought of when you first started that you've learned now?
Yeah. Well, like... yeah, so definitely one would be like any sort of personal turmoil that is undiscovered immediately, like, you know, divorce. I was recently fired or I have, you know, like broke up with my partners and I'm starting my own thing. That's always sort of like, you might be dealing with an unstable person.
A bit of a loose cannon. Yeah.
Yeah. When people start talking about how, you know, their previous clients were like, you know, Fiverr, 99designs. What's the other one? one of those services.
Like Upwork and stuff.
Yeah, Upwork. Yeah, like, oh, well, the previous person only charged me this. That's when you're kind of like, because it's hard to rein, you know, to get people back to reality, to like how much stuff should cost. So like in their head, they're like, well, I paid this much last time. Why is this so much? And it's, that's kind of an uphill battle a lot of times. That's, and then another one is when people just have no clue what they're doing or what they want. They're like really small time business folks who are really, you can tell they're stingy. And like, cause it's like, dude, the 80-20 rule is so true. Like the people that are going to pay you the least are going to cause the most headaches. So like $500 to somebody who's like about to go out of business is so much more money than somebody, you know, I've done work for like law firms and they're like, they can't even take a call because they're too busy doing practicing law. They're like, I sure, whatever, do what you got to do. Send me a bill. You know what I mean? Where that's like the guy who's struggling is going to bust your balls. I mean, those
he's
are like
want to check every single pixel, isn't he? He's going to.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh yeah. The strain in your voice just then, Steve.
Second guess. Yeah.
Oh, is this right? Are you sure? Like,
yeah. And that's actually something, it's a good summary that you've just there, is that if a lead comes to you and their sole focus is money, their sole focus is how much will this cost? How much will it cost me? They're clearly not thinking about this correctly. Thanks, Rozzers. If they're focusing on money, the idea is that they're just going to be focusing on that. Every decision that is made, they're going to be, that cost me $300 or that cost me $5,000 or this cost me that much. And then they don't see it as an objective long-term thing. The only way I've found to kind of break past that sometimes is to say to someone, okay, well, if it's going to cost you $10,000 and this logo, you think this is going to be an investment for the next 6 weeks. But if we get this right now, it's going to last you for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And if that doesn't swing them, then it's like, well, you're a lost cause.
Right. Yeah, totally.
And so when it comes to now, you've established yourself as this, as RDC, and CropCon's been a big impact on that. Did you go to many other networking events before that? Or,
nope.
Or festivals? So was this kind of the first impact that went, oh shit, things are bigger, different, scary?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I'm kind of like a fringe type of guy. Even like, took me a long time to even start interacting with people on Instagram. I was on there for years before I even started, like, you know, interacting with the creative community. I have a problem with that. Like, I'm a fringe. I like to be on the outskirts. I don't like to dive in right away.
Assess the battlefield, yeah, type thing.
What's that?
Assess the battlefield. Understand where everyone's going to be and how you can be most efficient. I'm the same. Like, I feel you. I feel you completely.
Well, then it's like, maybe it's part of that like imposter syndrome. Like those are the cool kids. If I'm going to walk in there and be like, well, who the hell is this guy? Like, who are you? You don't make cool work. Get the hell out of here. You know what I mean? And I mean, even there, it's kind of funny because a lot of the people at Crop do a lot of like skate punk, like lettering, illustration, like really kind of cool stuff like that, like Lincoln design type stuff. And they're like, you know, talking shit on people who do like logos and business cards and corporate work, and I'm like, man, that's what I do. Like, whatever, man, that pays the bills. I don't know who's buying. I mean, I don't know who's making millions off skate punk stuff. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I mean, you can
a handful
can,
of dudes.
Yeah, you can. That's the point, though. The point is that like they may have found their niche, and you can think about it that way. But at the same time, you're going, right, well, I've got my little island here or my little boat, and just because their boat on the other side of the river is like covered in fireworks and skate ramps and like massive horns and graffiti, it's like, well, we're not going to go to that boat. We're going to like leave them to do their thing.
Right.
And people forget because of how quickly you can move around the internet, how quickly you can go between these different places, that everyone thinks they're the same. Everyone feels like, or at least this is how I see what people interact and how people interact, is they go from your account or my account to Lincoln Design Co. I know we're not slating Lincoln Design Co. too hard here, hopefully, but or to Aaron Draplin or to Blind or to any other larger account or a particular style, maybe Forefathers Group or Ghostly Ferns or somewhere like that. And you see them and you go, oh my God, they're doing so much better. And you've just clicked once. and you don't know how much money they're making. You don't know who their last client was. You don't know the last time they were in the office till 3 a.m. because the client changed something last minute. You don't know whether they lost copyright on something because their contract wasn't sound. All these things that kind of social media hides and completely disguises. So I completely, going back to your idea of standing on the edge and a bit of imposter syndrome, but also understanding that maybe I shouldn't be in that group. Like, maybe it's a good thing not to be in that group.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, I think that's a lot of the folks, and I'm not trying to bash anyone, but I think a lot of the folks in that group, I got the sense that a lot of them were very young and a little bit like naive. Like, I'm true to my art and I'm going to do what I want and fuck the world if they don't want that. Yeah, that's cool when you're in your 20s and early 30s and you don't have to, like, you don't have kids and you don't have a mortgage, but when you got to pay the bills, like, I read a quote recently that I thought was perfect. It was like, there's no selling out when you have children. There's no such thing. Like, when you got kids, do what you got to do. I don't care if you got to clean toilets, clean the fucking toilets. Like,
they're your priority. Like, yeah, you made them. They're your priority, no matter what.
Right. So, I mean, as much as I'd like to do the cool skater punk, you know, flame balls and skulls and stuff, like, I missed the boat on that. Sorry.
Yeah, well, there's a question, actually, to think about. A lot of the people who listen to this are fairly young or thinking about going to Zion or trying to make their own way. But it kind of relates to family and social side, if you don't mind.
Sure.
The question is, what do your kids think about what you do?
I think they like it. And I try to involve them as much as possible. So, like, you know, like every morning for lunch, I'll like doodle on their lunch bag. And like, and so they're like, oh, my friend requested this. Can you draw this? Or I'll ask them, what do you want today? They're like, oh, I want the Boston Red Sox logo. I'm like, all right, cool. Or we'll go to the store and there'll be a whole wall of beer. And like, at this point, I've done over 100 beer labels. So I can go to any liquor store in town here. And at any time, there's like 20 cans with my artwork that my son has seen. He's like, Dad, you did this. That's awesome. They think it's cool. You know, they saw me on YouTube last night and they were like, and I had to ask them, I was like, does this make me cooler or does this make YouTube lame? Like, how do you see it? They're like, no, it's pretty cool. But, you know, you're not playing any games or anything cool.
You're not playing Fortnite, Dad.
Yeah. I think they think it's cool. And I hope, more importantly, I hope that they see, like, from me that, like, you can make things. Like, if you don't like your life or things aren't going your way, that you can actually take charge and make something out of it from nothing. Like, that's, I think, the beauty of design is you just make stuff. Like, you know, if you want to make extra money, take more work. It's very low, entry to start a design business. Really, you need a laptop and some software, and if you have some skill and you can get clients, it's not like you need a ton of overhead. You don't need like a ton of equipment, so it's kind of safe.
It is kind of safe, but it's also really nice to hear that through your own work you've been able to, even if it's just your kids requesting specific doodles on their lunchboxes, but mm-hmm. you've been able to foster some creativity in them as well. And that, is it satisfying to kind of sit down at the end of the day or first thing in the morning and have those discussions with your kids and feel like, well, what does it feel like? Does it feel like it's benefiting your career, having these little bundles of joy with it, being excited about your design work as well?
I think anytime that I can, like everyone talks about the work-life balance stuff, and it's like, yeah, anytime you can make the work and your life sort of mesh together and be the same thing. So it's like, if I sit down with my kids and while they're doing their homework and I do some logo sketches at the same time, it's like, I'm with them. You know what I mean? Like, we're together. I might not be, you know, like on top of them, like doing their homework for them, but it's not like I'm in another room locked away. They have no idea what I'm doing. I'm not even talking to them. So like, just like, cause I mean, you have to be involved within their lives. Like, they need to see you. You need to be present. That's more important than anything. And then I would love for them to be creative people, but I'm not going to like force them to do that. And then, like, even in the back of my head, when I think about growing this thing, it's like, well, what if this thing blows up mega, right? And I'm making a shitload of money, and I can either want to pay for them to go to college, or I could say fuck college and don't take on student loans. Just come work for my business. I can train them early, and then they don't have to struggle like I did, you know, digging pools and swinging hammers and joining the military. Like they could be set. Like part of me thinks of that stuff too. So there's a lot of like, what's my why? And that's, I don't want them to struggle. Like I've been like struggling forever. So
yeah. So are they a big part of your why then?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, having kids is that's a big deal. It's expensive. Everything is more serious when kids are involved, you know? So anything I can do to like even extra money to pay for daycare or camps or lessons for them to like go do gymnastics or things that like I couldn't do as a kid because we didn't have the money, I can now do for them, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And I when we start talking about this topic, your eyes kind of just went, yeah, like I'm doing this thing for my kids. Like we're helping, we're building, we're doing something. It's actually helping people, yep. Not just your clients, but also your family life. And
sure.
I'm sure in comparison to 2 years ago, your work-life balance has improved drastically as things have improved in the business as well. And when it comes to that work-life balance, obviously you have kids and a wider family than many people may be listening to this, but what's one thing you do on a daily basis that helps you do that work-life balance? Is it just being present, or is there something a little, do you have like a routine that you go through every day? Like, do you write? Do you make a to-do list? Like what keeps you structured on that?
It's funny. I think you had mentioned something on Twitter about writing every day.
Yeah.
Recently. And it's funny because I am really good at keeping mental lists and mental like goals, and then just like they're in there. Like I don't need to write them down, because if I write something down, I'll lose it, so it doesn't matter. But then, you know, I don't know, I'm so disciplined, and so like once I have something in my head like I have to do or need to do, it's like it's getting done, like come hell or high water, whether I have to get up at 4 a.m. or do it at 2 a.m. like it's happening. And if like something's happening in my personal life, like that'll come first. Like, oh, I got my kid has a birthday party or a baseball game, or, you know, I'll just make the work happen outside of those areas. If I have to lose sleep, then so be it. If I have to skip the gym, fine. But yeah, I don't really have, I guess my routine is pretty loose, but not at the same time, but it's not strict either. I don't know. I probably should go through like what my day looks like, but.
I assume having kids, your day is kind of like up, down, all around.
Oh sometimes. Yeah. Like honestly, like the last 2 years, if you ask me anything, I'm like, dude, it's a blur. Like my mind is like gone. But I don't know, it's working so far.
Yeah, well let's swing things back around to design. Sure. For a few more minutes, just to wrap up the show, I want to hear. Sure. A little bit about, maybe you said you've done a bunch of different cans recently that you can kind of see out in the stores. What has been your favorite project to work on up to this point?
Well, for packaging and beer stuff, it's definitely been I did a branding for a newer brewery here in Connecticut called Labyrinth. I'd done a ton for a bunch of other places, but a lot of that stuff was like highly dictated. Like, oh, my cousin was high one day and had this really cool idea. And can you make this idea? And like, it's an awful idea, but they'll pay me to do it. And I just do it and ship it. This place, Labyrinth, they're brand new. They didn't have a ton of money, and they wanted to can their beer, and they have a really cool vibe. They're all like D&D nerds, heavy metal dudes. Like they have this cool sign in the bathroom says employees must carve Slayer in their arms before returning to work. Like they have a Crowler machine. It's Mr. Crowley. Like it's,
oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
So like they're really riding this thing hard. So, they asked me to do their labels, and I said, okay, I'll do them. But considering you do not have a budget that I would normally ask for, I will do this at a lower rate, but I'm taking creative control of this thing, and you're not going to push me around on that. Like, I'm going to own this. They were totally fine with it. We did some iterations. Like, we could be an illustrative version, a basic version. And what we settled on is like these really interesting kind of like Photoshop mashups, but that look like heavy metal album art. Because originally they wanted like comic book characters. I'm like, guys, I can't do that for the budget that you have, but I can do these cool Photoshop mashups. I don't know. Some of that stuff's on my Instagram. I started posting.
I'll link it down below. Okay. Check the descriptions.
And that stuff has been, it's been fun for me. I mean, it's cool because like to take somebody from being like, we're brand new. We don't know what we want to look like. We have this vibe that we're going for. I don't know how to represent that. I'm like, dude, I know exactly how we're going to do this. Like, we're going to make it look like heavy metal artwork. It'll look different than anything you see on the shelves because nobody's doing this type of style. And it I don't know. I think it's working pretty well. People are nuts for it. Like local, like they already get this like sort of heavy metal crowd there because of like their vibe. They have a really awesome tap room. It's a perfect location. Like, they're going to kick ass.
Is this the kind of bar that has like, or tap room that has like board games in and stuff as well? Like a big heavy metal jukebox and board games and beer and.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's where they put it is like in the middle of an area of town. That's all these old mills that are all vacant. And we're converted to apartment buildings, and it's all young professionals and college students, and they're like right in the middle of it. So it's jam packed all the time. And like, you know, people, and it's cool. I go in there to like, you know, grab a beer or something. And even like the staff is like super pumped about it. Cause like they've got like punk rock dudes like working there, and they're like, dude, his label's out. Like, even like the staff is pumped about it. You know what I mean? Like, whereas like one of the other breweries, like, oh, this label sucks.
We dictated the entire thing and it sucks. Oh, weird that. It's like, but that's so good to hear that you can actually go and see it, be able to work with a local client, actually be able to walk around and go, hey, I did that, and see it, even if it's only on, I don't know, a limited edition run and it's 10 cans, but to be able to say you've got one or you've bought one and you've tasted it and you've seen it in the world is I personally find it such so satisfying to have a physical thing with your design on. So to be able to see that like with happy customers must be grand. Like, it must be.
Oh
really,
yeah,
good.
Totally. And I always say too, is like, I think people over, I don't really hear people commenting on is like what a good branding job will do for like the attitude of your employees.
Oh yeah.
If that makes sense, like I'm saying, like I go in, like the people that work there are excited. They're excited to sell this thing because they're and be part of this place because they're like, this like looks cool. I am part of something cool.
They're proud of it.
Yeah, they're proud of it. And like, if your staff is proud to work for you, like they're gonna do a good job. Like, if they're like, ah, oh, this place is embarrassing. The logo sucks. The can looks like shit. Like, the beer. You know what I mean? But like, the best part is when, and they actually make really, really good beer. So that's more important too, because the worst is when I make a really cool label and people are like, oh, well, the beer sucked in it. I'm like, well, I didn't make that. Like, that's always like, ah, oh, that sucks.
My computer, like the fan has been putting out some weird liquid recently. We just canned it and like put it on the shelf. But yeah, that's something that not many people seem to talk about. You're right. It's that when you do a good branding job, this is something I was talking to Brian at the BKH. He's a really awesome guy, works in social media and branding. But he was saying, and we have a discussion about when loads of people have been talking to about this, but when is a brand a good brand? And often it's when people and customers talk about that brand and share your message to other people. So when those customers are coming in and going, oh, this beer tasted amazing and these can designs were sick, and they share that with someone else, that's the sign of a good brand. But just understand that like the idea of what a good design brand identity job looks like, what a good outcome is exactly what you've just described, is when the team, the staff, the client who hired you, and the customers all turn around to you and say, like, shit man, this is really, really good. Like, they're super proud and pumped to be around what you've created.
Yeah, like it's that's the best. That's where I'm like, dude, this is awesome. And then they once that happens, like everyone's happy on both sides, then it's like it opens up the door. Like, I can kind of do anything at this point. Like, I'm like, hey, can I come down and do a photo shoot? Like, yeah, whatever you need. Like, they're like, do whatever you want. You want to rent out the room. We'll close off a separate section for you. You know what I mean? Like you kind of get that, like you get their trust, like you know what they're doing, and they don't really, they'll bend over backwards for me at this point. You know what I mean? If I wanted to really do something really cool.
I mean, I assume you don't have Slayer carved into your arm just yet. No, so you're not an official employee just yet.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, one day maybe you'll have something similar to that. So just to kind of wrap up today's show, Steve, thank you very much for joining us and really kind of diving into a bit about more so kind of the client side of it, and also what it's like to be running, firstly, a family life, which is incredible. The fact you do that is, if you're not like super proud of yourself for being able to manage all of that, like I'm going to be proud of you for you, because that's insane. I kind of have struggles with discipline and routine, and it's just me. So, but yeah, and thank you for talking about your process and the differences between being yourself as a freelancer, being just one man, and really trying to push something bigger and push yourself to be a more defined company, I think is kind of a process that not many people talk about, especially someone who is going through it right now. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share that. And hopefully you guys listening at home will go and check out Steve's work and really follow along that journey as it develops. So Steve, where can people find you on the internet?
Instagram is probably my home. So at Steve Raboin, R-A-B-O-I-N. I have a website, Steven Raboin. Actually, I'm transitioning over. I'm building my RDC website right now. And that's going to be, I bought like everything, every iteration of, I have like Raboin Co, Raboin Design Co, Raboin. So that'll probably be out shortly. I'm not everywhere. Instagram mostly. The other things aren't really, I'm not too into.
Well, all those links will be down in the description for today's show. And thank you very much to everyone who has joined us. If you have enjoyed today's show and you're listening on Apple Podcasts or through iTunes or an app that can allow reviews, please leave us a review for The Fowler Hour and maybe who you'd like to see interviewed next. So we'll see you guys next time. Bye for now. And cool. Thank you so much. That recording is now all stopped. Whew. How are you feeling? Yeah, I didn't want to go kind of like too hard, because I know from what you said at the start, you're feeling like a bit drained. But exactly, especially doing a back-to-back. So yeah, thank you for doing that. I wasn't expecting you when you said that you'd be happy to do it kind of one a day and then the next day. Yeah, awesome. So what's the... one thing we didn't actually touch on, if you've got a couple minutes, I'd love to kind of hear more about the mentality you have about, you mentioned on the show with Chris that you feel like you could always fight someone. You could always like, you always walk into this room and be like, well, if like all goes to hell, like we can just tussle and you'll lose. So where does that come from? And how do you maintain that mentality? Because you said you were angry from when you were born, pretty much. Like you were mad. And it's something that I did karate for 12 years. I'm a black belt, et cetera, et cetera. But I have not the same discipline, but a similar understanding of discipline. And I struggle and have kind of locked away that side, so that I have this side in my mind that's, it feels kind of like an inferno at times. Like you just let it go and it will just run riot. So how do you take that energy that you have and kind of harness that in a direction that's useful? Because at the moment, I personally feel like I've locked it away and it's useless. Like, I'm not using it. I'm just kind of scared of it.